Welcome to Dugout Dish, episode number 3. Coach Glasser, hello.
Hello.
How are we doing today?
Phenomenal. How are you?
I'm good. Looking forward to getting into it. I think I'll make a statement off the top here, and then we'll unpack all of that. So college baseball is the most competitive that I've ever seen it in, 20-plus years? And I think there's quite a few reasons why that's the case currently, and today we're gonna unpack that and see what we find. So first piece, we'll start off with 2021. We had the MLB draft, got shortened to 20 rounds, and I think that this has had a pretty significant impact on college baseball. Right, for a couple reasons, and I'll try not to get too long-winded on this, but essentially what's ultimately happened is you've got 20 rounds of guys that aren't signing, and those guys are going to college. And the way that the pay structure system used to work is that you could get a high school guy in the 25th round to come to camp to sign, you know, depending on how the bonuses work. But with the new bonus structure, there's just a lot less wiggle room for being able to give money to a guy who, you know, you're going to take in the 15th round, 20th round, 21st round. And these guys are showing up on campus, and I think it's had a little bit of a trickle-down effect. And I'll pass it over to you to take it from there.
I think with the draft being shortened, it's the, you know, in the short term, you're going to see less high school guys going into the draft. And then in the long term, it's going to start the trickle down effect, like you just said, to all the other divisions, because with the draft being shortened from, I mean, I think when we played, it was like 75 rounds. Now we're down to 20. So those top guys, you know, unless you're really a top guy who's going to go get drafted in the first, second or third round, you know, those guys are they're not taking chances on them anymore and signing them and sending them the pro ball. They're going to go to college. You know, and I think nowadays, and we've talked about this a lot, that the development piece at college, you know, and specifically at some of the higher end schools, and you know, your Power Five type conferences, the development is better than you're probably going to get in minor league baseball. The weight room, the nutrition aspect, the straight up development that you're going to be able to get for, you know, 3 years at a place is going to put you a lot further along than you would be if you went straight into pro ball at 18 years old. You know, so those guys are now showing up at those schools that they otherwise weren't 4, 5, 6 years ago. So now there's those guys that, you know, kind of filled in their spots when they were drafted. They're not going to that school anymore. They're going to, you know, let's call it a mid-major. And then the guys that were filling in mid-major roster spots, there's not spots for them. Like, they're going to, you know, Division 2, Division 3, things like that. So you're starting to see a little bit more of a trickle down effect into kind of the lower divisions, if you will, of guys that, you know, they might have been fringy Division 1 guys, you know, 3, 4 years ago. Now they're, you know, Division 2, Division 3 guys, and there's nothing wrong with that. But there's an aspect, excuse me, specifically from the draft being shortened, that is making this, you know, a lot more competitive of a landscape in college baseball. And, you know, quite frankly, I think it's amazing, you know, but it is becoming way more competitive for that reason.
Yeah. I mean, the easiest thing to compute it to is velocities, right? Like, that's the most tangible piece of information that you can get with a pitcher. And, you know, position players are, it's a little bit more ambiguous, you know, there's, you know, 60 times and all that, but we all know that doesn't directly relate. But 6, 8 years ago, that right-handed pitcher who was 84 to 86 and like had a little bit of feel for what they were doing with a breaking ball, that guy was a surefire Division 1 guy. And I mean, we played with him, right? Like, I don't want to sound like one of those old heads, but like, we played with those guys. And now he's just kind of another guy for Division 1 baseball at this point. Like, unless you're 6'3 and projectable, or you're a really good athlete, or, you know, you might do something special. There's so much data and so many metrics that are that allow guys to dive deep into what makes somebody effective. But those guys are showing up on Division II, Division III campuses now. And, you know, the ceiling has been raised because these super high-end guys are showing up on campus. And, you know, that's how you end up with, you know, some of the dudes that we're watching running around right now, like Dylan Cruz at LSU. Like, 5-8 years ago, that kid does not end up in college, but he's there now. And there's a lot. I just named him because I watched him the other night. I mean, that kid's impressive, but there's a lot of guys like that running around college baseball right now. And to your point, those guys are taking up roster spots from guys who were really good previously, and they're going to that quote unquote mid-major. And then you get all the way down to Division III, and it's like, oh crap, like guys who were scholarship guys before are Division II, Division III guys, and guys who were surefire college players 5-6 years ago, they need to work hard to find a spot. And, you know, that average number gets thrown on like 7%, you know, maybe 9 or 10 when you start factoring in junior college and NAIA. I think that percentage is going to go down because, yeah, I mean, there's still the same amount of roster spots, but there's just more kids, you know, there's more talented kids running around, and we'll get into that in a minute. But it's interesting to see the impact that it's had. And I think, you know, if you're a high school kid, unless you're going to get that $1 million signing bonus, these facilities, the development, you know, Major League Baseball in a sense is they've kind of outsourced that development to the college level. And, you know, there's a lot of data to support it, that college guys have a better chance of making it to the big leagues. And I think that college coaches, and I mean, me and you know, both know a few of them, that they run into these guys who are high school draft type of guys, and they sit them down and they say, hey, I know the money might be there. I know pro ball is where you want to be, but your goal isn't to play pro ball. Your goal is to play in the big leagues. And here's a lot of data that supports, if you come and play for me, if you come and play in our program, you're going to have a better chance of getting to the ultimate goal, not just the short-term goal of kind of getting a payout. Anything else you want to add on that topic?
Yeah. The lone thing I would add is the development piece for, you know, I think especially the higher end programs with the facilities and the data and everything it is that they have that kind of supports guys going to that program and being able to make the decision of like, we're not, you know, you don't have to go and play professionally straight out of high school. Like you can go to, and I'm going to use Wake Forest as an example, not, you know, yes, they're having a phenomenal year, but you know, the pitching lab that they have was one of the first in the country. I mean, they have a kinesiologist on staff. They have they have edutronics. They have everything it is that you can possibly imagine to break down your windup and everything it is that you need to do in order to become successful, to throw harder, to throw more strikes, to get more outs, and to really develop into what it is that you the best version of what you are going to be by the time you're 20, 21 years old. You know, and that is going to get you further along in another 2-3 years after you get drafted than it ever would have if you went straight into pro ball out of high school, right? Like you're not getting those types of things from a development standpoint when you're 18, 19 years old in rookie ball or, you know, on the facility doing things like that, you know, so you're getting a lot more out of it from a college standpoint. And it's not just, you know, going to college, you know, you're still going to be playing against really good players. You still, you know, and the other really good players are showing up on campus too. So you're going to have to get them out, or you're going to have to get hits against the guys who are really good on the mound, you know, so that competition aspect is still going to be there. You know, so there's a lot more, I think, that, you know, why it's becoming more competitive, but there's certainly the development piece and the facilities that a lot of these top schools have are just far and away better than anything that you would get at a lower level of pro ball and things like that. So these guys are getting, you know, you're going to start seeing, and I think baseball is doing a really good job of fast tracking a lot of these younger kids into the show, which is a lot more fun to watch when you're seeing 19, 20, 22, 23 year old kids running around in the big leagues, where in the years past, like, you know, you had to wait. However, you know, they held you down. And now it's like, well, he can do it. Let's go. You know, so it's great for the game. It makes it a lot more competitive, and it makes it a lot more fun to watch too. So as a fan of the game, it's a great thing for college baseball to have.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there's something to be said at the higher levels of Division One baseball that competition level, it's as good, if not better, than rookie ball. Like, some of the talent might be a little bit less. Like, you might get some super electric 18-year-old arm. But when you're talking about the atmosphere, you're talking about playing for something that really matters, right? And not that games and rookie ball and stuff don't matter. They absolutely do. Winning always matters. But at the end of the day, there's a big difference between playing for the Gulf Coast League championship and playing to win the ACC or the SEC or the Big 12 or playing in a super regional. And that environment translates over to pro ball eventually, right? It's a different game, and hopefully we'll have a couple guys to on the podcast here soon that'll be able to elaborate on a little bit. But that competition environment's an important piece of development as well. And I think that bleeds pretty cleanly into one of the other factors of why college baseball is better than it's ever been, is that these kids have access to so many mechanisms to get themselves better, right? There's the technology portion. Everybody's got a facility. Everybody's got a hitting guy. And, like, you know, you see them all over Twitter and Instagram, and some of them are blah, but a lot of these guys are good. And they're helping these kids get better, and they're creating an environment where these kids get to go in and they get to work on their swings and they get to work on their throwing. They get to become better in the off season, and I think that that's played a big role in it. Like, kids throw harder, they move better, they hit the ball harder than they did 5, 6, 8 years ago. And you can't – there's really nothing you can say to argue it. Like, you can talk about the finer points of offensive play or – command for a pitcher, but when you're looking at the raw talent piece of it, I think kids are better today, and I think a lot of it has to do with the training.
The training is far superior nowadays than it ever has been in the past. You know, college baseball and probably baseball in general is really trying to take a step forward into the technology aspect of the game. You know, we're pretty far behind, I would say, than probably some of the other sports, but you know, you start seeing it with the analytic piece of, you know, the Dodgers are the one team that probably comes to mind about all the decisions they make that are a little bit more data driven than some of the other teams out there. You know, but from a hitting and a pitching standpoint, you know, with Rapsodo and TrackMan and HitTrax and you know, everything it is that you can possibly come up with from a technology piece, those things being utilized in a way to develop the player is better than it's ever been in this game. You know, when you get a lot of people to be like, well, you know, you can't just teach off a Rapsodo. You can't teach off, or you're not going to coach off a TrackMan. I'm like, yeah, but it's another tool that we have that we can use in order to develop and get the best out of these players. Some guys, they need to kind of see that stuff and digest that data to kind of figure out how good you know, what they have to do in order to be good. Some guys, they don't need it. You know, and that's fine, but it's figuring out what works for each and every individual kid. You know, there's no one right or wrong way to get kids better. And if you're in the business of trying to get kids better from a baseball standpoint and to get them to be the best version of themselves, then you have to try to do everything it is in your power to get them better. And that means you're going to have to be on top of the technology. That means that there's going to be some old school things that you're still going to teach, and that's fine. Like, I still teach old school things, you know, but there's a lot of new school stuff that you need to kind of be on top of and teach as well, because that's going to get these guys further along and better than they've ever been in the past. You know, and the access to it, the amount of people, the social media, you know, it's out there. And you know, in order to be a really good coach, you need to be on top of it, and you need to be able to kind of digest it and break it down and digest it enough to get to your players so that it gets them better too. You know, so there's a lot of layers to it. But I agree with you. I don't think that there's been a time in the last 20 years that I've been involved in college baseball that there's been this type of stuff going on where it's kind of exciting to be around and see all the things that are getting guys better.
I mean, if you go back just 10 or 12 years, I mean, like, think of the quality of the pitching machines that are available now. I was talking to this with one of our buddies the other day that, like, kids aren't intimidated by velocity anymore. And it's because you can simulate it. And with some of these pitching machines, like, you can crank these things up, you can get a ton of reps. I mean, wasn't that long ago when we were playing. I mean, early days when I was coaching, that the only reps you got off of a live moving ball, most of them were from somebody's hand 45 feet away throwing bat in practice. And now, I mean, you're having trouble with a slider, like, let's set the machine up and let's rip some sliders. Like, let's work on some stuff. And I think kids are better prepared. I think that when they get there, they're a little bit more acclimated to the speed of the game because of the things that are able to be simulated. Now, the soft parts of the game, you know, the base running, some of the strategical stuff, you know, you're talking about some of the situational offensive stuff, learning how to operate within an offense, not just necessarily as a hitter. You know, I hear some coaches talk about, like, hey, kids get to me and they don't know how to do that stuff. And that's fine, but you can always teach that stuff. But if you get a kid who shows up to campus and he can handle velocity as an offensive player, like, that's a massive box to check. And it's something that these kids get simulated. And I think it's shortened the learning curve for a lot of these kids. And, you know, I think, you know, you go and watch these guys pitch and you go and watch these guys play offense and, you know, they're better than they've been. I mean, I was up in Boston last summer for like five straight days at the Boston Invite, and I was blown away about how many kids who were right-handed who were 85 to 89 and weren't committed. And that was kind of an eye-opening moment to me, like, wow, the game's really changed, because 6-8 years ago, every single one of those kids got a scholarship offer, and there's just so many of them. And it's good and it's bad. Like, it's great for college baseball. It's tough for high school kids, because I think it can be a little bit eye-opening with just how good some of the competition is. But, you know, it's another piece of the puzzle as to why college baseball is the way that it is right now. And it's fun to watch, but the reality is like, it's better than it's ever been.
Yeah, being able to handle velo from a hitting standpoint is probably one of the biggest things that freshmen need to be able to do when you get to campus. You know, I used to say this all the time. I used to set the hack attack up for us when I was coaching. I just throw it at 87, 88 and be like, here you go, figure it out. Because this is what we're going to see all the time. And if you can't handle 87, 88, then, you know, I don't necessarily know how quickly you're going to get yourself into the lineup if you can't handle it. And I think in some ways it's hard because you have, you know, depending on where you're coming from, what you faced, you know, consistently in high school. Like, yeah, are you going to see some guys that are going to run it up there into the low to mid 80s? Yeah, you're going to see a handful. You know, I think now you see more than you did when we played, but there's a big difference between constantly seeing, you know, mid to upper 80s, low 90s day in and day out, and seeing it, you know, once a weekend, twice a weekend, you know, whenever it is, when you're coming up through high school and summer ball type stuff. So it's probably the biggest thing I would do from a coaching standpoint with younger kids when they got to campus is just like, hey man, this is what we're going to face. This is what you need to be able to handle. If you can't handle it, we need to figure out a way in order to get our swing in a spot where we're going to be able to handle this on a more consistent basis to get yourself into the lineup more. You know, so it's, but you're right. I mean, I don't even know if I was talking to you about this the other day. Like, we had the jugs machine in high school, the two-wheeled stacked on top, hit the yellow dimpled balls. it was terrible. Now you can hook up hack attacks and spin machines and, you know, all these other, the three-wheeled machines are, I mean, it's a game changer from a development standpoint. Like, you know, and it's funny because you'd hear the, you know, my hitters would complain all the time, like, oh, you know, it moves a little bit. Like, yeah, man, it's still generally in the same, like the jugs machine would throw it in the same spot every time. There's some variation. That's the point. Like, you don't get into the box in the game and be like, hey, Mr. Pitcher, could you throw it right here at like 84 with no movement? Like, I could really get my barrel to it then. Like, no, that doesn't happen. Like, he's trying to get you out. Figure it out. Figure out a way to get your barrel to the baseball so that you can find success. So I like it because there's a challenge aspect to it too from a coaching standpoint. And, you know, you can kind of see, you know, I've said this forever, right? Like, you know, and I would say this to my guys when I coach, the guys who can flat out hit don't complain about the machine. Like, you'll watch, like, the dudes who can flat out hit, like, all, like, they'll barrel it off the machine. Like, they're not the ones that are complaining because they can hit. Like, the dudes who can hit, doesn't matter. And it's a weird thing to say, but it's true. If you can hit, you can hit. You know, it's the guys that, you know, really struggle that kind of look for that excuse to be like, eh, it's moving a little bit. Like, yeah, man, it is. But so does the ball in the game. I don't know what to tell you. Get over it. Let's go. Come on.
Yeah. Being able to create that like super competitive environment, right? Like there's a time and place for comfortable batting practice and getting your timing, getting your rhythm, like that pregame stuff. It's super important, right? Because at that point, it's about making sure your moving parts are lining up, making sure you're feeling good about yourself. But those practice sessions, these coaches, and you know, we're talking not just the college coaches, but these coaches who are coaching in these facilities, they can create an environment that's going to push these kids, right? And it's going to force them to do some things that they might not have had to do if they're just taking normal batting practice or they're just taking front toss. Like it's a classic case of like everybody feels good when things are easy. But we all know hitting a baseball is hard, and you know, being able to recreate that environment, I think kids are they're just better. So the other piece, right, and this is the topic that it's been a hot topic for a couple of years, but the dreaded transfer portal. And I don't think there's any denying that it's had a pretty significant impact in the competition level of college baseball. And I don't think it's going away, right? COVID years are, you know, they'll exhaust here shortly. And, you know, you'll have a few less old kids who continue to play. But I think it's still going to have a significant impact. And I think that, you know, and this is based off conversations that we've had with coaches, and it makes complete sense, but you're going to go into the portal and look for guys who've already played college baseball because, I mean, there's a laundry list of reasons, but they've already played. There's a ton more video on these kids, right, with synergy. I mean, if you're a college coach, you can go watch, if somebody threw 25 innings, you can watch all 25 innings. And that's more of an evaluation than you get on pretty much every high school kid that you'll recruit. You know, you can see at bats, you can see statistics, and it's not just box scores. Like these guys have access to extremely detailed data. I mean, I was talking to one of our friends the other day, and he was talking about how some of these coaches have access to data that evaluates how good of a receiver a catcher is. I mean, think about how far we've come in terms of what these guys have access to. So the evaluation's easier. You're getting a more mature kid. You're getting a stronger kid. You're getting a kid that's been in a college program. He's been through a college season. There's a ton of value there if you're a coach who's trying to either get your program good quick or you're trying to plug a hole. You know, who are you going to go with? The 17-year-old kid who may or may not be good at your level, regardless of how talented he is? Or are you going to go with the guy who's got a track record? And any coach who you put him on the spot and they're really being honest, they're going to take the college kid. And I think that's another reason that you're seeing kids who previously may have played at a slightly higher level go to a different level, is because these other coaches, they're filling roster spots with players who are better.
Yeah. It's not going anywhere. You know, I think we've talked about this probably on most podcasts we've had so far, and we'll probably continue to bring it up once or twice when we have interviews and things like that. But you know, it's not going to go anywhere, especially with the one free transfer that you're going to have now, where you don't have to sit out a year like you used to have to. You know, if you get it wrong or something goes on and you want to transfer, you're not necessarily getting penalized for it. And it's not a bad thing, you know. And I also think you're going to have, you know, guys that are lower division guys who have a year left or 2 years left and have developed into Division I type arms or players who might jump in the portal when they graduate and go do grad years somewhere at a Division I school. And that, you know, to your point, is going to be a lot more valuable for coaches to kind of say like, okay, this guy has played 3 years of college baseball at the Division III level. Here are all his numbers. It looks really good. He also played in summer ball in the, you know, New England League. He played in the Perfect Game League, whatever it might be. Here are his numbers. He had a lot of success, you know, for a year. I'm going to take this kid over a kid who is coming out of high school, who I'm not sure might be that guy. Like, he might be the guy when he's a junior, but I need a guy who's going to be a dude right now. And I can go with the guy who's a little bit older, who's a little bit more seasoned, and I have the track record to know he's going to give us a little bit of a better chance there. You know, it's no different than other sports. You know, you see it all the time in the NFL with quarterback. You know, they draft the rookie quarterback and then sign the veteran so he can learn under him. You know, it's kind of the same thing. In the short term, it's going to help you plug that hole. And you know, it might not help long term, but you might get both players. And then that younger kid can develop his freshman year while watching an older guy who's been through a college season, who knows how to prepare himself and go through that, and really kind of lessen that steep learning curve that he's going to have his freshman year, and find a lot of success earlier in his career than he may have otherwise would, because he has someone that, you know, can kind of hold his hand and take him under his wing and show him how it's done. And, you know, I think you're going to end up finding a lot more success there than you have in the past, because there's going to be a lot of good players in there and you can kind of plug holes where you need them. You know, so it's not going anywhere, and I don't think it's a bad thing for college baseball, but you know, it's something that is going to be prevalent and on the forefront for the foreseeable future in every division at every school. You know, it's going to be a Division III thing, a Division II thing, a one thing, you know, so it's going to continue to be a thing. And you know, at this point, it's embrace it and let's see what can happen with the portal.
Yeah, and I think one of the big misconceptions is that it's just a bunch of Division I guys switching programs, and it's not, right? Like, take a look at, like, Boston College is number 9 in the country right now. Two of the dudes who were chewing up innings for them pitched at Wheaton College and Babson College. And for those of you who aren't listening, they're Division III blue bloods, like College World Series teams. I don't know if they've ever won national championship, but you're talking about really good baseball programs, right? And those guys developed at those programs, and now they're a key piece of the puzzle for the number 9 team in the country. So, you know, and then like you look at UConn last year. If anybody watched UConn play in the regional or at any point last year, their catcher was a stud. He's a Stonehill guy who is a Division II program, right? These guys are identifying, and I'm missing a ton of guys, right? But these coaches are identifying really good players at different levels that have gotten better because they have visibility into what these guys do in the summer, and players talk. Like, if you're a pitcher and you're pitching in the NECBL and you happen to be a freshman at UConn and you're throwing to this kid at Stonehill, like, damn, this dude's really good. Well, we could use a catcher. Like, those conversations happen. And that, like, there's just too much information. There's too much data out there. These guys get a chance to play against players from different divisions. And if you're a Division III guy or Division II guy and you go tear it up in a summer league, like, these Division I coaches are going to take note. And, you know, in this case with grad year guys, you know, it's a little bit easier of a move, but you know, it's not just Division I to Division I. It's Division II to Division I, Division II to Division III, so on and so forth, all the different combinations. The other piece of the puzzle that people don't often factor into the equation is junior college. And junior college baseball is really good. And there's pockets of it that are exceptional. And coaches absolutely leverage junior college baseball as kind of a farm, as like a farm league, right? Like, I think it was 2 years ago when Mississippi State won the national championship. There was some wild stat that like 26 of the players on the two rosters were junior college guys. So one, for those of you listening that are going through the recruiting process, junior college is not a fallback. And two, you also need to realize when we talk about the transfer portal, it's not just guys who go into the official transfer portal. It's these junior college players who in most cases have played 60 plus 70 games. Then they play summer ball. These guys have a leg up on Division I guys, and they have a massive leg up on high school kids because of the amount of baseball that they played. And in a lot of cases, they're playing in really competitive environments. And if you're a college coach and you're looking for a guy to come in and step in right away, either because you're really good or you're trying to get better, junior college it's absolutely a part of the recruiting equation that most people don't consider. And if you look at a lot of these really good teams, you know, in the SEC, ACC, like their rosters are littered with junior college guys. And, it's for good reason. They're all really good players and they can play at that level. It just, for whatever reason, it may have took them two extra years to get there, but you know, it's kind of like piece number three of why college baseball is awesome right now.
The JUCO aspect is interesting because there are a lot of really good JUCOs out there that can compete against some of the better teams in the country at all divisions. With that, you have a bunch of guys that are probably in need of development over the course of their first 2 years of college. And it suits guys because if you were to go to a four-year school, you might not play that much over those first 2 years. You go to a JUCO, depending on what it is, you might be a guy for them or in the mix to be a guy, which gets you more at-bats, which gets you more burn, which, you know, there's a little bit of there's some different rules. They can play more games in the fall. They play, you know, in the spring. So you get a lot more development out of it, you know, which then can propel some guys a little bit further along than they otherwise would have because, you know, maybe you go to RPI and you don't play for 2 years. Where you go to Hudson Valley, you play for 2 years. Like by the time you're a junior, you're a dude that I would be recruiting right away, you know, to come to RPI because you got, instead of having 20 at-bats with me, because there's a guy in front of you, you got 300 at-bats. You know, that's invaluable when you're talking about development over the course of especially your first 2 years. So, you know, it's not just the straight up transfer portal of people moving schools. It is, you know, JUCOs and things like that, you know. And I do think, you know, this is the cynic in me and the coach in me. Like I hope this doesn't happen, but I do think that in the short term, you might start seeing less and less guys being top guys from lower levels being sent to summer balls for that reason, that you're going to have guys that, you know, coaches are going to be a little bit scared of sending some of their top guys into summer ball programs and having them, you know, quote unquote, getting poached and going and transferring somewhere else, you know? So I you know, there's a catch 22, right? Like it's good for the game because there's more competition. Kids can try to better themselves, things like that. But on the other hand, you know, you have guys that are at lower levels that are unbelievable baseball coaches and really good recruiters and evaluators of talent who are getting guys that are maybe missing some one or two things. They develop those one or two things, and all of a sudden that guy wants to leave and go somewhere else. You know, when all of a sudden that guy, you know, who recruited you and got you there, like that dude, I mean, we've talked about this before, you have to win baseball games to keep your job. And if you're developing guys that are then getting, you know, again, quote unquote, poached and going elsewhere, like that's putting you in a tough spot too. So I don't know. That's just, you know, that was the cynic in me. That was my thought process when I was going through this, when I was coaching recently. Like, I don't know if I'd send some of my top younger guys to summer ball and to do those things because I don't want that to happen. Now, you know, they're seniors and they might have a year left. They want to grad transfer. Like, that's a completely different thing that we can talk about, you know. But younger guys that I want to keep in my program so that I can be good and we can win baseball games, like it's going to be a hard conversation that guys are going to have with their players. And I see both arguments. I could see sending them. I could see them being like, look, we're not sending you anywhere because I don't want anyone to try to take you. You know, and I don't fault either one.
Well, I think it's interesting that you say that because I think what it's lent itself to, and we're getting a little off track, but I think this is an interesting thing to talk about, is it's forced college coaches to recruit players that are already on their campus. You almost always have to be in recruit mode unless you're in one of those top programs, right? But like if you're in one of those mid-major programs and you got a dude who blows up, because it happens everywhere. Like, parity in college baseball right now is at its highest. I mean, there's dudes up and down the divisions. There's a smaller gap between the top team and that kind of second tier team than there's ever been. You got I think there's like four or five quote unquote mid majors in the top 25 right now. But if you're one of those coaches and you go and you do a really good job developing guys, you got to re-recruit guys. Because if they get out into the summer, or you have a freshman who gets a temp spot out in the Cape League, and he goes out there and he's awesome, everybody knows. And I know there's rules, right? But we all know not everybody abides by them. And with the transfer portal, with the timing of it, and I believe they're pushing it back a little farther this year so that coaches have a chance to get a better idea what their rosters are going to look like. But I think it's a 45-day window after the tournament field is set. So if you go out in the Cape League and you're a temp guy and you get a couple starts under your belt and you're really good and people start talking, like, you could just dump your name in the transfer portal. And all of a sudden you've got Cape League footage of dicing dudes up. Like, you're going to get picked up. And that's a real thing. Like, you know, there's rules, but everybody breaks rules. There's reasons that guys have gotten punished recently for breaking rules, suspensions and all that kind of stuff. Like, not everybody plays fair. That's just the reality of it. And yeah, when you're one of those coaches that you worry about your guy going to summer ball, like, that's a real thing now. It's an odd thing to think about.
I think, you know, I say that, and like I said, it's the cynic in me, but at the same time, you know, I think it depends on, and I digress, the kid that you have, you know, and I think everyone knows at this point, I was the head coach at RPI. Like, if I got a guy who's a nuclear engineer, I'm not necessarily worried about that kid, you know, trying to go many other places. You know, there's not a whole lot of places out there in the world where he's going to go play baseball and be a nuclear engineer. You know, but if it's a business kid, that's something that is going to weigh on me, you know, depending on what it is that they're doing and how good they are and things like that. You know, if that could be a worry for some people moving forward. So, you know, I know it's been a worry forever, but now, you know, with the change back to, you know, not having to sit out a year and things like that, I think it's going to be a little bit more worrisome for some people.
Yeah, I think move on to topic number four, kind of subtopic of this competition level in college baseball, and I think it would be remiss to not mention it, is social media has had an impact. I think it's had a significant impact. And if you're a high school kid listening to this, like, you can use Twitter and Instagram to your advantage, right? Like, there's a wide reach. Coaches are recruiting nationally. Coaches are actively looking at Twitter to get a beat on guys. You know, whether it's just a quick identification of, like, oh, that kid's arm's really good, let me reach out, I know who that guy is, or I know who this summer ball coach is, let me reach out to him and get an idea. But kids are getting recognized. They're getting put on people's radar at a much higher rate. I think it's expanded the reach of almost every program in the country. You're seeing schools that used to be much more regional in their approach from a recruiting perspective get out into different regions of the country. And I think a lot of that has to do with social media. And it's just another mechanism for guys to find players without having to travel to do it. And if you're a coach and you're not at least scrolling through the Twitter feed to see some high school kids, you're probably a little bit behind the eight ball. Now, does that mean that that's your honeypot that you're going to go find guys? No, but it's a great way to identify guys. It's a great way to keep track of players without having to actually get to the field. And, you know, coaches are still going to do their due diligence, but I think it's played a significant role.
Yeah, it's changed. You know, it's changed recruiting. It's changed kind of how you do things. The ability to kind of get a feel for whether or not some of these kids have the baseline, you know, metrics or skill set for what it is that you're trying to recruit is 24/7 in your face on your phone. You know, so it's become I'm not going to tell you it's easier, you know, in some respects it might be a little bit harder with things like that, but, you know, you could be at an event and scrolling your phone and watching at bats from other events on guys that you're interested in or you are recruiting, but, you know, you're in Massachusetts and the tournament that this kid's at is in Ohio, you know, and you can't be at two places at once, but, you know, you can kind of get the live at bats depending on, you know, what type of tournament they're at. So, you know, it's certainly made it, it's made the country a little bit smaller from that aspect, and given programs that, you know, may not have had, you know, I'm not going to go so far as to say a national reach, but your reach is going to be a little bit further now because you have the social media aspect of being able to find these kids on flat ground apps and, you know, PBR and Perfect Game and you name it, when they tweet everything out, they're out there. So, you know, you can get a lot more, you know, kind of information and a feel for where these guys are at that you could be interested in recruiting. And you're right, you're still going to want to go see the kids play, and you're going to call coaches, and you're going to get references, and you're going to do everything it is that you've always done. But, you know, instead of getting that email, that one-off email where all of a sudden you kind of luck into a guy, you know, you're more so lucking into guys on the social media end of things than you ever would have prior, because you can kind of figure out, you know, you can click on their, you click on their bio, and if it's done right, you know, you see what their GPA is, what their grades are, what they want to major in, things like that. Like, that kid might be right in your wheelhouse. Hey, man, how's it going? I'm Coach Glasser. We're looking for a guy who is, you know, a shortstop. You look to have a similar skill set. You know, when are you playing? When can I come watch you play? You know, and it accelerates that quickly. And it can be, you know, I don't want to say that easy, but it can be like that, to where, you know, hey, he's going to be at the Boston Invite, and that's where I'm going, so I'm going to watch this kid play. And you can make a decision, you know, relatively quickly on whether or not he can play for you. And it all starts with Twitter or Instagram or, you know, whatever it might be. So it's certainly changed the game. You know, and you can talk to your blue in the face about some of the things where it might be negative for it, but I think by and large, if done the right way and leveraged correctly for both coach and student athlete, it's a win-win in the end.
Yeah, the expanded reach is huge. And one last piece on this before we wrap this up, the technology for live streams. Every high school kid's got a live stream now, so even if I can't go see a guy pitch, right, like, you know, most college coaches, Monday's your day to go see guys, right? Occasionally you get out, and some programs do it a little bit different, and they might have guys leave practice early, or, you know, whatever it might be, to go see a guy throw or something like that if he's a high priority guy. But now, if I got practice from 1:30 to 4 and your game is getting live streamed at 3:30, I just flip on my phone, I can go watch you take 4 at bats. Like, what an advantage. You know, so it's had a huge impact. I think it's a good thing, right? From a coach's perspective, at least, it makes my job, I don't know if it makes it easier, but I get more information. And if I'm a coach, I want information. The more information I have, the better decision I can ultimately make. You know, we've talked about this as an art, not a science. And in order to build that picture, whether a guy's good enough, the more information you have usually is better. You know, so it's an interesting time. I think the big takeaway from all this is that college baseball is awesome. If you're not watching it, get on your live stream and start watching some of this college baseball. Get a feel for what it's like. But it's super competitive. It's a great game. It continues to get better. And, yeah. Anything else you want to add?
I agree. I think that the more information – you can garner a lot more information – so on social media than ever before. You know, like when we started coaching, you'd show up to a game and, you know, half the guys didn't even have rosters. Now you can, you know, you can, even if you have a roster, or you can ask somebody like, hey, what's that kid's name? You can pull it up on Instagram or Twitter pretty quickly. And all of a sudden you have that kid's profile and everything right in front of you, which is, it's never happened before. So, you know, you can get a lot more information that way. And, you know, for better or for worse, you know, in most instances, you hope it's for better, but, you know, it's right at your fingertips now. And if you leverage it the right way, like I said, it can open more doors for you and allow, you know, make it a little bit easier for coaches to really get into the recruiting process with you.
Agreed. Well, that'll wrap it up for this episode. Thanks, Coach Glasser. Appreciate your time. We'll run it back again next week. For those of you listening or watching on YouTube, hit the like button, follow us on Instagram and Twitter, EMD Baseball. Hope to see you back here soon.